So good afternoon, everyone. So today I'd like to continue my and our exploration of the Diamond Sutra. In case 67 of the Blue Cliff Record, Mahasattva Fu expounded the sutra. Emperor Wu of Liang invited Mahasattva Fu to lecture on the Diamond Sutra. Fu ascended the rostrum. He shook the lectern once and immediately descended. The emperor was flabbergasted. Master Zi, a spiritual advisor to the emperor, asked the emperor, "Your Majesty, do you understand?" The emperor said, "No, I do not understand." Master Zi said, "The great Master Fu has delivered his lecture on the scripture." So this case is like the Diamond Sutra. It is very clear, very simple, but unfathomable. Both take away concepts, ideas, and words. This is the entirety of the 32-chapter Diamond Sutra. Although I'm being overly demonstrative, Mahasattva Fu shook the lectern only once. And with that, the Taisha was complete and the Diamond Sutra was fully expounded. For a moment, try to imagine the scene. The Emperor Wu of the Liang Dynasty in China, the very emperor who years before had a dialogue with Bodhidharma, invited Fu to the imperial palace to lecture on the Diamond Sutra. There were many great people in attendance, all dressed in ceremonial gowns and finery. There were, I imagine, generals and soldiers, ministers and minions, administrators, secretaries, and royalty. The hall was vast and regal, and probably filled to capacity. The emperor, whose shadow you could not step on, was most likely front and center. He had been a devout Taoist who became an ardent Buddhist. He was known to study the sutras and sastras, and would, on occasion, don Buddhist monks' robes and lecture on the texts he was studying. He was, one would suppose, waiting in anticipation, maybe with some well-thought-out questions to test Fu's knowledge. And he in walked Fu. He made his bows. He settled himself on the cushion. He probably sat in meditation for a time. And then he opened his eyes and looked at the great people gathered there and immediately gave his exposition, completely exposed, in an instant like great thunder or a lightning bolt. He showed not only himself in the Diamond Sutra, but also the great earth itself. Fu showed with that one shake of the lectern all of what he is and is not. And he showed all of what the Diamond Sutra is and is not. And he showed of all of what the great earth is and is not. One day, a lecturer of a philosophical sect named Shi Sen asked Eikaku Koshu, "How does pure essentiality suddenly give rise to mountains, rivers, and the great earth?" The master said, "How does pure essentiality give rise to mountains, rivers, and the great earth?" What do you think? Is this an exposition on the Diamond Sutra? And if so, is his response the same as Mahasattva's Fu? So we asked, how does pure essentiality suddenly give rise to mountains, rivers, and the great earth? And the Master said, how does pure essentiality give rise to mountains, rivers, and the great earth? I'd like to read you chapter 20 from the Diamond Sutra. It goes like this. Subhuti, what do you think? Can the Tathagata be seen by means of the perfect development of the physical body? Subhuti replied, no indeed, Bhagavan. The Tathagata cannot be seen by means of the perfect development of the physical body. And why not? The perfect development of the physical body, Bhagavan, the perfect development of the physical body is spoken of by the Tathagata as no development. Thus it is called a perfect development of the physical body. The Buddha said, Subhuti, what do you think? Can the Tathagata be seen by means of the possession of attributes? Subhuti replied, no indeed, Bhagavan. The Tathagata cannot be seen by means of the possession of attributes. And why not? Bhagavan, what the Tathagata speaks of as the possession of attributes is spoken of by the Tathagata as no possession of attributes. Thus is it called the possession of attributes. Commenting on this chapter, the Lin Chi monk Dao Chuan said, officially, there's not enough room for a needle. Privately, carts and horses are able to pass through. He then continued, please look up and see the sky, far and wide and without tracks. Turn your body around a bit. Everything is right before you. Mahasattva Fu shook the lectern once and immediately descended. I imagine he continued like Bodhidharma before him to walk down through the palace hallways to the door, leaving, never to return. Fu, however, did not leave the country but went back to the marketplace to sell fish. At one time, he had been a farmer. It was said that during daylight he worked in his rice fields with his wife and children. At nights, he sat in meditation and studied sutras. Kind of makes sesshin sound luxurious, doesn't it? At some point, reading the Diamond Sutra deeply, studying and practicing it, Fu felt compelled to sell his farm and all his belongings. In an earlier section of the Diamond Sutra, it says that there are two essential practices. Actually, it is one practice with two aspects. Those are to be present to what is right before you and to give birth to this thought, the thought to save all beings. In sesshin, we fulfill this practice by returning and again to mu. We fulfill this practice by returning to who hears, to breath counting, and to body awareness. Whatever your specific practice is, that is your task, and it is your joy. When not in formal practice, we still are mindful of what is right before us, not our stories and anemic narratives, but the fact of what is right here. And we still give birth to one thought. But we also manifest that thought of giving in our daily lives in three very concrete ways. we do that materially, emotionally, and spiritually. Material giving or gifts include food, drink, clothing, and medicine, which help alleviate greed. Emotional gifts include comfort, caring, empathy, and compassion, and these alleviate anger and hatred. Spiritual giving includes being Sangha cultivators, building and maintaining practice centers, supporting existing practice schedules, and developing and nurturing Sangha relations, and these alleviate delusion. So Mahasattva Phu felt compelled to sell his farm and all his belongings. He asked friends to care for his wife and children, and then he gave all his proceeds from the sale to feed the poor. He moved to the marketplace and became a day laborer and fish seller, and he continued to practice and to study. While in the marketplace, he began to send letters to the imperial palace, beseeching the emperor to continually protect, nourish, and feed the poor, especially the farmers. Although what I'm going to say is incorrect and interpretive, Fu shook the lectern when behind it, but also when in the marketplace. Although Fu's lectern shake was not a political statement per se, nor is the Diamond Sutra a political treatise, both fundamentally undermine the foundations of power, fame, and riches based on the perceptions of rich and poor, powerful and weak, good and bad. We usually live our daily lives as if in a dream, as if in the dream that I am here and you are over there. Our continual perception is of a subject and object, and we keep the subject's viewpoint, my viewpoint, central in our activities. Pay attention to your daydreams and internal narrative both on and off the cushion during this session. Pay attention especially to your nighttime dreams, for there is one commonality always in your inner narrative. You are its center. The I is the focal point. The Diamond Sutra, Mahasattva Phu, shake that dream and dreamer and turn both upside down. Phu abides nowhere, and from that mind comes forth a new, more powerful narrative that is not bound by the concepts and constructs of elite and common, or of rich and poor, of powerful and disempowered. So I'd like to back up here and gather a couple threads that are still loose. Mahasattva Phu sold all his belongings, his farm, and asked friends to care for his wife and children. He then gave away all the money from the sale of his belongings. So there are two things here, one quite radical and the other not so. He sold his belongings, his farm, and found friends to care for his wife and his children. I imagine she and they had little say in his spiritual quest. One person said to me when I was talking about this, she said, consider that Fu lived in feudal China. And that being the case, he was probably fairly compassionate, for after all, women and children were treated as chattel in that time period. This was a time, she said, before the notion of sexism and racism existing. This is true, I think. And here is a great being Fu, Mahasattva Fu. And he did not. He could not see through his cultural and maybe even his personal blinders. It makes me wonder, what are we not seeing? What that is right before us are we ignoring? These questions are not for now, but at some time they are worthy of a Dharma discussion or Dharma inquiry. I wonder, how do I address what is unconscious? Or if you don't like that concept, how do I address what is outside of my awareness? My anger, even though I think I am kind. My rigidity, though I think I am pliant. My trauma, though I think it is resolved. And these are on the personal level. What are we missing as a group? What are we missing as practitioners? What are we missing as Westerners? That is right before us, but we are blind to. Again, this is not the time or place for musing on these questions, but I do think they hold some importance for us. So that is the not-so-radical Fu. He was, however, quite radical in giving all away and moving to the marketplace. And I wonder, what are we lay folks to do with that? In the first chapter of the Diamond Sutra, we find Shakyamuni putting on one of his three robes, picking up his one bowl and going into the marketplace to ask for food for his only meal. Previously, as we all know, he left his palace of riches and spoils. He left his family, his new baby and friends. He left his comfort and ease and went into the forest. For we modern lay folks, this is not our time or our life. It is not our path. We are not mendicants, holy, impoverished, and simple. Yet really, it is only different in the particularities because we all, the Diamond Sutra Buddha, Mahasattva Fu, Shakyamuni, you and I, we all live at the edge of not knowing. And we all too live at the edge of life and death. All of us face into the vast reaches of what it is to be human and humane. We all face into the vast reaches of what we do not know and of what we cannot know. And yet, that is our practice. To bring our attention, our mindfulness to that which is right before us, whether seen or not, whether known or not, even whether knowable or not. And this path we walk together, this ancient and almost timeless path, does demand a simplicity. And by that I mean, we need to at least for a moment, or two, or ten, we need to give up, to surrender each thing. We need to let go of our feelings and thoughts, not stopping them, but letting them go. We need to give up our hopes, dreams, and ideas, our desires, wants, and needs, and to come fully to what is right before us, to come fully too. And we do this by being fully engaged in each activity, by engaging with each move, with each sound, with each hoot of the owl or cry of the rooster, by engaging with each breath, becoming more fully involved in this life, in your life. And it is in being fully engaged, which is intimacy, that we save all beings. And that intimacy, our engagement to life, will be and is our personal exposition of the Diamond Sutra. So it is in being fully engaged, which is intimacy. That is how and where we save all beings. And that intimacy to our engagement in life will be and is our personal exposition of the Diamond Sutra. Okay, thank you.